Good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now, with host Ken Johnston. Stay tuned as Ken talks with authors, journalists, and others regarding topics important to us as Catholics in a world that's in desperate need of God's love. Love that comforts
from heaven. Ready to go. I'll be right back. Yeah. I got to go because we're going live. And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. And I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners. And thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years. It allows me to be here on Wednesdays to bring a couple hours of hopefully great programming. Just an announcement about two different retreats coming up before we go to our guest. The first one is February 7th to the 9th at the Malvern Retreat House with the Family Life Center. Our president, Kathleen McCarthy, and Monsignor Stephen McHenry will be on sale on hand for the Rekindle the Fire retreat. Again, that's February 7th to the 9th in the Family Life Center. And you can register for that retreat at malvernretreat.com. I was also asked in the last week or so to direct a Matt Talbot retreat out at the Malvern Retreat House. It's Matt Talbot 66. And that weekend will be May 9th to the 11th. That's Sunday's Mother's Day, but we'll be done. Plenty of time for you to get home to your mother or spouse for Mother's Day. And that one, I haven't looked at the Malvern website to see if they have registration online. Sometimes the Matt Talbot groups have independent retreats where they rent the space at Malvern and they handle their own registration. But tune in next week and I'll definitely have the information in case you want to attend. So without any further ado, we've got a great guest today in Chris McMahon. He's the president and CEO of Aquinas Wealth Advisors for over 30 years. He's advised his clients in the areas of comprehensive financial planning, asset allocation, retirement planning, and estate tax management techniques. He served as president of the Duquesne University Alumni Board, president of St. Bernard's Roman Catholic Church Parish Council, board member of Oakland Catholic High School. He's a member of Mount Lebanon Municipal Pension Board and board member of the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation of Pittsburgh. Currently, he's a member of both the Duquesne University Board of Trustees and Investment Committee, and he's also a committee member of the Little Sisters of the Poor, a board member of Mary's Place Pittsburgh, and a board member of Legatus International. Do you have any free time at all, Chris?
Thanks for having me.
No problem. In addition to all that, he's written a book that's published by Sophia Institute, entitled Faithful Finances, Six Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life. And just before we get to the book, Chris, and your bio mentions the Little Sisters of the Poor, my good friend Father McKay, who's normally here with me on the 4 o'clock hour, but's under the weather the last couple of weeks, was chaplain for the Little Sisters of the Poor, the home that they have here in Philadelphia. He was over there for about 20 years, so well aware, some great people.
Absolutely. They do great work, don't they?
Absolutely. So you've been involved with finances for a long, long time and decided to write this book, Faithful Finances, Six Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life. What brought that about?
Well, for years I had a normal national registered investment advisory firm. We had offices in, across the country, California, Florida, D.C., and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I spent a lot of time in Stone Harbor. I'm sure a lot of the folks in the Philly area know all about that. And very normal. And as our children got older, Molly and I have five children. We've been married 35 years. We started to find a hole in as we grew deeper in our faith, we realized that the business really wasn't aligned. They used to say, Ken, don't discuss politics or religion with people. And for a while, I thought that was appropriate. What I realized, though, is the secular world, especially the investment world, had gotten more and more kind of off track and away from our faith. we actually started a company that specifically did faith-advised investing because there's a real hole there. There's only really a couple mutual funds that are available there now, which isn't enough. And we decided to start a company, and we developed some technology to help people see their what's their underlying, what they're supporting in their investments. That's been very effective at Aquinas Wealth Advisors. And along with that, we wrote a book saying, here are the steps someone can take. Like I felt, you feel like you're out of alignment. How can you personally align your faith and your finance to make it, to make sure that you're supporting those values which you hold most dear? And that's really what, pardon me, what the book was all about.
Yeah. I was in finance myself for at least the last 20 years I worked, but on the IT side. I wasn't involved at all in the investment part of the business, but I worked for one of the largest mutual fund companies. And even there, you mentioned right at the outset of the book about wokeism. And, you know, as I was rolling out of there to go full-time in ministry, that was definitely making its way in. And so as Catholics, you know, we want to adhere to the gospel. And I think oftentimes in our pursuit of financial security, that might be one of the areas where people, you know, might let it, you know, turn a blind eye a little bit. And to your point, there's probably not a lot of resources out there for people that want to do quote unquote Catholic investing.
Well, even more than that, it's unfortunate, but most of the big firms have really taken a deep dive into the wokeism. So even if these well-meaning, you know, how many people of faith, advisors of faith, are misguiding their clients because they have no ability to do it any other way, or they even will say, well, we offer faith-aligned investing, not realizing that even if they do pick these funds, which generally aren't faith-aligned, that the money, still ultimately the profits, are going back to these corporations, which are supporting horrifically anti-Catholic endeavors, abortion, God forbid, or, you know, pornography, that kind of thing. So we really, the great news is technology. There's so much that's been bad about technology, Ken. But the beautiful news is that what's happened is it allows us as people of faith to really, you know, we're all created in God's image, right? We want to love everyone, but we need that our voice be heard also. And at the very least, we don't need to support these things. And as we send this message back to Wall Street, they're going to listen, and they're going to, over time, we'll be able to radically transform these companies. You see it already. Many of these companies are rolling back some of these severe DEI mandates, right? They were, you know, misguided. They're born in compassion, certainly misguided compassion, but they're born in compassion. The great news is we're heading to a place where our voices will be heard in these companies. Ken, I'm not even talking about the businesses many of these companies are in. You know, in addition to the businesses they're in, some of them have taken their social activism completely flying in the face of Catholicism, supporting radical gender ideology, supporting abortion in a very aggressive way. These chairmen of companies have become, you know, some of this kind of far-fetched stuff that was, you know, born in the, you know, the faculty lounge at Middlebury or somewhere, somehow permeated the boardrooms. And board chairmen thought it was appropriate to say, well, if they're not going to pay for abortion, we will definitely give our employees $4,000 to go across state lines. Never, ever mention the people of faith that would, why not they get the $4,000 for the support to have their child, right? It's just crazy.
Right.
Yeah. The good news is we're going to win this thing, Ken.
Yeah, well, we say a lot of times, Chris, that we're going to win in the end, and we're just hoping that the end isn't too far off, hopefully within our lifetimes.
This isn't the end.
Yeah.
I think we're going to ultimately win. But, I mean, this particular issue,
yeah,
we're going to win in the next 5 years. This is different.
That's great. That's great to hear. Our guest is Chris McMahon. The book we're talking about, in addition to other topics, is Faithful Finances, 6 Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life. It's published by Sophia Institute, and the last update I got, Chris, was that it was due out for release the end of this week, tomorrow maybe?
Yeah, exactly. So we're excited about this. The folks at Sophia are great, and we wanted to make it a kind of a how-to book, Ken, because sometimes it feels daunting and overwhelming. People have relationships in place they don't want to mess with, and, you know, the industry's been lying to us for a long time, too, Ken. They say, oh, you can't really align your financial life with your faith life. Or if you do, even if you can't do it because it's so confusing, if you do it, you're going to leave so much return on the table that it's not going to be worth it. It's just you're going to really, to your detriment, you're going to do it. Now, it's interesting. A lot of the folks I know, kind of the folks that, you know, I just celebrated a big birthday, Ken. Actually, I was here. If you came to my conference room, my office here, you'd see some big balloons that say 60. I think they were doing that to celebrate my birthday and also poke fun at me a little bit. But they used to say that you can't do it because you're going to lose return. Many people, as they get in there, you know, later in life, are saying to us, they come to us and say, I'm willing to lose return in order to have faith alignment. What we found is the good news is you don't have to, because we've seen performance be quite strong even in completely faith aligned portfolios. So that's also some bit of good news, I think.
No, I'll say because like I said, you know, people may think that they can't make as good a return, but because of people like you that are willing to do, you know, make the effort to find those instruments or particular stocks or funds to invest in, that'll help them not only continue to receive that return, but align their investments with what we believe. In a world where sometimes it seems like nobody believes what we believe anymore. So, how hard is it to actually do that? I think in the book you lay it out, but
absolutely. We want to make it kind of like it's a how to build a table. You know, here are the steps 180 days from now. You know, get some wood, get some nails if you're building a table. Same thing here. We're saying to folks, if you take these steps and you take them one at a time, just like eating an elephant, actually very manageable. We've had people go through this process and said much less painful than I thought. And at the end, it was ultimately tremendously satisfying to know that I've done this. So I would say it's certainly not like marathon training. It's much easier. Maybe like a 5K. If you're going to run a 5K or walk a 5K, but I think that's where we are, because we made it pretty easy. Each of these steps is pretty manageable, and we do them each in a month. And at the end of 6 months, we got this thing done, and we're in a good spot. So it's certainly manageable, absolutely.
So I can't imagine in this world. So the step one and the basis of this whole thing, according to the book, is to create a family mission. And I certainly don't have a mission for my family. I know what my mission is for the family, and I suspect it's pretty much in line with my wife's mission, in getting everybody to heaven and, you know, going to Mass and what have you. But I have to wonder how many families actually draw up a mission statement.
Absolutely. I think you're right. A lot of us, just as we lead, you know, as husbands and fathers in our families, we have a tendency to say, here's what it is. And our wives is kind of the, you know, the brains of the outfit in most situations. I think that teamwork allows us to, you know, live out a family mission statement. But we found an important step to actually write it down and say, here's what's important to us. Here's what's important to our grown children, to our teen children, even to younger children if they are. Just say, here's what we think is important. Because what better example? You know, I was with a friend of mine, a priest who lost his father. And what was beautiful was during the homily, Father Tom mentioned his father and his mother together started praying the rosary on their honeymoon 62 years ago. Every day for 62 years, they prayed the rosary together. And I thought, that's, you know, a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I think that if we, I don't know that they wrote down a family, you know, family mission statement, but what they did together was so beautiful. But I think writing it down is really important, because we have clients where we say we think we're on the same page, and all of a sudden we have clients, Ken, we've talked to over past, where the husband is making contributions to the Sisters of Life, who Molly and I are very close with, and the wife is making contributions to a pro-abortion organization. So, you know, sometimes people have avoided talking about these issues because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to bring this under the microscope, thinking it'll, you know, end in a bad way. But it's just so important to get alignment, wherever it is. Because some folks say, let's sit down and do a family mission statement. After they do it, they say, gosh, we do not have the same goals. Therefore, we cannot further this process. But what normally happens is people say, yes, this is very important to me. We're in alignment on this, and how do we work closer towards it? But that mission statement is one of the most valuable tools people can end up with, absolutely.
Very good. And you get on that basis, and then you know, the book basically walks you through, once you have that, how to get to that final goal. And you said it takes about 6 months to do that?
Exactly. Some could do faster, but we found that people, we tell them 6 months because we want them to be, you know, calm about it, not to be overwhelmed. But we have found folks get in the middle of it and say, let's go. We're going to do it in 30 days. And that certainly can happen. And sometimes if they have an advisor, that advisor can help. But many times advisors don't want you to do this because you know, it's to their, to, you know, sometimes it's to their detriment because sometimes they see those assets leaving or going somewhere else. But honestly, if people have faith that this is important to us, once they see, for example, I may have mentioned, I think earlier we developed some technology that helps people see what they're actually supporting in their investments. Once their advisor says, don't worry, you're fine. I can't tell you how many times this has happened to us. And we show them dozens and dozens of violations for the companies they invest in, whether those companies are involved in some kind of pornography, which is big, huge, or their companies involved in funding stuff that they're against. Both of these issues are huge and very realistic. So once people see that, many times they're forced to take action. Ultimately, they're happy they did.
Is there a resource you should provide online that helps with that, Chris, or do they contact you directly?
No. It's interesting, Ken. If folks want to just do that, they could go to our company's website, Aquinas Wealth Advisors, and they could take a faith and finance score themselves if they chose to. No obligation, no, you know, they could do what they want with that data. They could say, okay, I'm just going to go about my business, or they could say, you know, they might contact us then and say, hey, I want you guys to help me with this. But, you know, it's just so important. As I said, you'd be shocked how many folks, how many with and institutions we worked with, dioceses, that we've gone back and said, we have some terrible news for you. You guys paid for 475 abortions last year. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And they're horrified because, as I said, the industry's been kind of misleading us, Ken. They've been intentionally misleading us about what's going on.
Right. Yeah, and some of these bigger organizations, right, they're the ones that are actually driving what was the wokeism. And it's great to see that somebody's got a handle on it that can reverse this trend. And the hope that you've just given me in only 18 minutes that we've been chatting here is just beautiful.
Ken, I appreciate it. There's a thing called Corporate Equity Index, CEI Index. It's literally run by a person who used to run Planned Parenthood. For the last 4 years, it's been the gold standard to determine how woke you are. It's insane. Companies, we think about it. Target really didn't expect to sell many boys' bathing suits, you know, boys' fitting bathing suits that look like girls' bathing suits. What they wanted to do was get a high enough score, CEI index. Why did they want that high score? Because BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street, all three of them, Larry Fink, who runs State Street, literally said 3 years ago, unless you adopt our policies around gender ideology, even if your company's profitable, your job's in jeopardy because they control so much of the S&P 500, so much of they control these companies. Chairmen were making profits, said, oh my gosh, we've got to bend the knee to the woke altar. Now, good news is people have really lost their appetite for this once we realized it was happening. Companies were producing not only annual reports, Ken, but spending millions of dollars developing DEI reports. Equity report, annual reports, same cost. Whole departments, a whole cottage industry of this thing has popped up, and you'll see it now. Companies are really unwinding this quickly because they realize it's fundamentally unfair, and it didn't help anybody. It was kabuki theater. All it helped was a very small group of people to advance an ideology which was completely inconsistent with our faith. So, again, it's good news for people.
Amen. And I guess the most recent headlines with Zuckerberg and Meta that are backing off, and it just seems like every week now there's another large corporation that has woken up, if you will, to what's really going on.
Think about what they were doing. They were creating designations in basically the science of wokeism, and unless you had those designations, you couldn't chair the DEI department. So then you have to go to a conference for 2 weeks in California, and everyone was afraid. Every chairman and university president said, you need to report directly to the president because this is so important. Well, it really was, again, it was posturing. It was, signaling, you know, value signaling. I'm not saying correctly, but it was that, look at me, I have this, done this too. I have this person who reports directly to me, who was on my executive team. And it's just as they piled them on, they're taking them off. And now all these people that had made their trade in, you know, DEI are backpedaling and moving on to the next thing. And it's just incredible. But as people of faith, we cannot tolerate the degradation of the individual through pornography and supporting that. And we cannot support, you know, protecting the most vulnerable amongst us, which is the unborn. And I cannot tell you how many dioceses and investors of faith right now have no idea they're supporting it. That's wrong, and we've got to help them show them that.
Yeah. One of your looks like one of your friends that endorsed the book here, Tom Monahan, is another one that you know, has really stood up for his Catholic faith with Ave Maria University, right? And the work that he's done. Yeah.
Yeah, I admire Tom tremendously. He's 86 years old now. He still does push-ups every day, which I admire, and he weighs himself every day, which I've got to get to. You know, he is an incredible leader. I was honored to be the vice chair of the Legatus Board, International Board, for about 5 years, and to basically be his, you know, to at least carry his bag. I get to be his caddy, and to see him in action, where he set aside his ego completely for the advancement, to get, as you said so accurately, to get more people to heaven. And it's really something to aspire to, who he kind of swore off some of the, you know. I remember the first time I met him in line when I was going to a meeting. He was buying some bananas at a grocery store near his office up in Ann Arbor. And got in his, like, you know, he got in his Jeep Cherokee and he drove off. I thought, he's really a man who's not, you know, who's not doing anything but trying to advance God's kingdom on earth.
Yeah, sorry about that little background echo. I think it just went away.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks, it's gone.
Yeah. So, it's really impressive to see when people of Tom Monahan's caliber and certainly you're there. I mean, we used to, at least at one time with Fox Business News, are you still, you still make appearances on Fox?
I'm what's called a co-host for Mornings with Maria. So about once a week, I'm fortunate enough to be in the, in Fox, in Mornings with Maria. She's a wonderful person and the organization is great. I do some other shows there occasionally, but, you know, really the main thing I do there is I have an opportunity. I was there yesterday in New York to spend 3 hours, and, you know, some people I really admire, and they're really a great group of folks, and it's been a blessing to do that, because in the secular world, we found that these people start, you know, these people are now, even the secular folks are waking up saying, you know, how do we do this? How do we align? How do we really walk, you know, walk our talk? And I find in general, I admire most of the people in Fox Business very much. And I've seen a lot of people in the network business over the years as a kind of a, you know, a media person myself. And it's just been an honor to be co-hosting Mornings with Maria. And I continue to do that. Yes.
It's awesome. And again, to have somebody with your principles and not bashful about your Catholic faith to be in that kind of situation. And obviously you're in a spot they think highly of you that you've been doing it for as long as you have been, and that you're doing it with principled investing is pretty impressive.
Thank you. It's been a gift. Honestly, it's been a blessing. And I feel like, you know, I said it the other day to my bride. I said, I can't believe that our businesses have grown to this point. Aquinas Wealth Management has been successful, and I feel like, you know, we're so. Someone asked me what would. I was born on January 12th, it was just recently, and I have an acquaintance who told me the other day, he said, you know, Jeff Bezos' birthday is January 12th. Aren't you upset? Aren't you upset that you're not, he's worth $300 billion and you're not worth $300, whatever he's worth, six, I don't even know what it is right now. And he said, aren't you upset? I said, not at all. I'm blessed. Well, we have 5 grown children. They all live in New York right now. That's the only non-blessing we see them a lot. Yeah. But I think to myself, how lucky we all are. And to spend our time, you know, like for the Sisters of Life, for the Sisters of Mary down in D.C., I just feel like we're so lucky to be in this spot, you know?
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I kind of walked away from that IT world back 3 years ago to work full-time in addiction ministry, and part of that involves this radio work that I get to do. And you can't put a price tag on that. You just can't. And there's times – even now where my wife will say to me, you know, if I say something about a purchase that we want to make, you know, well, you wouldn't have said that, you know, 3 years ago when you were working for that big IT firm. And it's true, but I didn't get nearly the gifts that I get today from being in this situation versus, you know, working in IT. It's never 9 to 5. It's more like 24/7. But
wow.
You know, the benefits of doing what I'm doing today, you just can't put a price tag on it.
Well, also an aside, I was thinking about Ken, you know, that Molly and I are very, as I said, we're very, very close to Sisters of Life. And one of them called me the other day because I have 2 brothers and a sister, we're all a year apart. My mother did a great job raising us alone, My dad died when we were very young, so my mother's incredible what she did. So my brother Mike, who I love, and he supports the Sisters of Life. And one of the sisters sent me a text and said, "Chris, I spoke to your brother, and he is so proud of you and Molly." And I laughed because I said, I spoke to my brother later. I said, and he's 1 year older than me. I said, "Isn't it funny that you have to sit there and you have to tell them how much you admire me all the time?" So that's a plus in and of itself. When your sibling rivalry still, he has to pretend that, you know, we're all grown up and don't make fun of each other. I really admire him. But yeah, it's been fun to be on this journey with my siblings too, because many of them, they come to our conference, Catholics to Shore, and they want to. That's what I found, Ken. We're lucky that you and I'm sure Molly and I feel lucky we're able to open doors for the folks. Some people don't maybe have access or don't have, or just nervous or don't want to extend themselves. And those of us who are comfortable doing that create relationships and pathways that other people could take much further than we ever could. So that, I think, is also a blessing, helping kind of other people feel comfortable and feel. That's why I like speaking in Catholic events, and you know, I do a lot of that as well. And I'm trying to advance that part of our lives because, given, you know, I think we have to do with what we've been given, and that's a blessing.
Amen. And you mentioned the Sisters of Life a couple of times. It's funny, I had a caller in the last hour, just in the last couple of minutes of the show, who's a huge supporter of the Sisters of Life here in Philadelphia. And I've been in contact with them a number of times over the past couple of years. And there isn't a happier group of people on the planet than the Sisters of Life. I think they have to take one of their vows is to have a permanent smile on their face.
It is amazing to see living with joy. And, you know, some of our best, dearest friends, the people we really love. You know, I was up there the other day at a committee. I was doing some board work for them, and I got a flat tire on the George Washington Bridge, coming back across the GW Bridge.
Oh, man.
And I think at one point in my life, I would have said, "Oh, this is a nightmare. This is the worst thing ever." And I actually have an issue with heights now as I've gotten older, which is ridiculous. But I laugh because I was able to get off the bridge and actually get down the West Side Highway, and I said, I don't care, man. Just to have an opportunity to be around that joy and that excitement. I got an email today. I got to go back up there in a couple of weeks. I'm like, anytime you guys want me to come up there, I'll come up there. And I'd love to be part of it because we had a thing, Ken. Molly and I mentioned we're involved with the Sisters of Mary down in Mexico City. That's the World Villages of Children, which also the Sisters of Mary exude that incredible joy and that, you know, you feel the palpable presence of Blessed Mother when you're around them. We were fortunate that three of the Sisters of Life had come with us the last couple of times we've gone down there. And you put those two joyful people together. There's no place in the world I'd rather be, honestly.
Amen. That's beautiful. Chris, we've already reached the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a short break. Got a couple more things we can talk about. But our guest today is Chris McMahon. The book he's written is Faithful Finances, 6 Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life. It's going to be released tomorrow by Sophia Institute. You can pre-order it today or order it for certain tomorrow at sophiainstitute.com. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, Father Glacy here, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the In His Sign radio ministry. It was this radio ministry that I listened to when I was going from being a lukewarm Catholic to an engaged Catholic, and this ministry really majorly affected the Catholic that I am today. Kathleen McCarthy in particular has an uncanny ability to speak to the heart, and when she speaks to the heart, she speaks with God's love, with His grace, and with His mercy. I can honestly say that I am a better Catholic, a better man of God, and have experienced the healing and joy of the gospel because of the great ministry of Kathleen McCarthy. And so I encourage others to listen to her so that they can experience the beautiful work that God does through her beautiful words.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. Again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign that allows us to bring you great programming like today's. And today's guest is Chris McMahon. We've been talking about all things financial and how to get your finances in line with what we believe as Catholics. So, Chris, it's really been great to have you. One of the things that we didn't get to, and you mentioned the time that you spend in Stone Harbor, but I believe you also have an annual conference that takes place in Avalon. Is that right?
Yeah, it's so nice of you to bring that up. Thank you. Yeah, we've had Catholics to the Shore now for 4 years. It's been a beautiful, beautiful event. You know, many folks don't get to go to, like, the Napa Institute if they have on the West Coast, and they have a couple things in, you know, New York now. They don't get to go to, like, a Legata Summit. But we found that something interesting about Stone Harbor, if you drew a circle on a map, 3 hours from Stone Harbor, you'd find about, you know, 50% of the Catholics in the country in that small circle. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So we said to ourselves, why don't we try to bring those same, you know, over the years we've been able to kind of connect with and create relationships with many of kind of the Catholic speakers. So why don't we bring them to a more intimate setting? By the way, the hotel we've used by coincidence is owned by an incredible Catholic. You may know Eustace from out there in Philadelphia. He's a great guy.
Yep.
And long and short of it, by coincidence, we used his hotel, not realizing there were statues of the Blessed Mother in the lobby, which is just, you know, incredible. And we really enjoyed it. This year, for example, you know, we've had a cattle call of all the greatest speakers and, you know, always plenty of religious and lay leaders. And we have really kind of top-level business people who have been achieving at the same time of figured out a way to, you know, to give their life back to God in a lot of ways, and certainly the religious leaders. Father Mike Schmitz is coming this year, which is wonderful, and he's just such, you know, he's had 1 billion downloads of his Bible in a year. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that just absolutely amazing? And a lot of the other great religious leaders are coming. I laugh because one of our dear friends, Sister Mary Gabriel, she hadn't confirmed yet, but she said, "Chris, I noticed I'm on your website already, so I assume you thought I was confirming." And I laughed. I said, and she's so great. And I said, "Yes, thank you for me, you know, inadvertently taking that liberty." But it's really 3 days for people to come down to the shore, stay at the Icona, or a lot of people, you know, have houses down there, and really relax, and then really lots of adoration, confession, and beautiful things. I had a very quick story that happened there a couple of years ago. Just one of the graces that came from it. If you had, can I tell you, some of the folks from our firm were there kind of, you know, doing registration, what have you. And one of the people came up to me and said, "There's a woman here who's checking into the hotel for, you know, the third day of the conference." They were there for the next day. And she said, "Catholics at the Shore, what is that?" And the woman explained it to her. People have, you know, bags and sweatshirts and so forth that say that. And she came to the staff person that came to me later in the day and said, "That person who asked me what this was asked if she could come to adoration, you know." And I said, which I should normally, I think is a good way to say, I said, "Absolutely not. I'm, of course, joking. Of course, she can come to adoration. She'd be beautiful, right?" And she came, and then she came over to me, and she said, "You know, my son and daughter-in-law are getting married here at the hotel tomorrow, and I really wanted them to get married in the church." And she said, "Could you speak with him? You know, her husband had passed away." And I said, "Well, I've only known you for 5 minutes, but I'd be glad to talk to him." So the son came to me, and he's about 30, and he said, "It really wasn't that important to us to get married in the church, even though we're both Catholic." And I said, "Well, think about what you're saying. It obviously must have been important to you because you know it's important to your mother, and for you not to even just to fulfill her wishes, it must be important enough to you to really to not get married in the church, that you'd hurt your mother in this way. And secondly, I said, do you think when your wife dreamed of her wedding someday, do you really think she dreamed of getting married in the Icona banquet room by a fraternity brother of yours? Or do you think she married, dreamed of getting married in the church in front of God Almighty in the Eucharist in a beautiful church, with all that entails, where someone sings to Our Lady, right? And he said, well, maybe more of that, but I can't do it because we're so committed to this and we haven't been in confession in forever. Well, the good thing about Catholics of the Shore is we have many, many, many holy priests there. Mm. You may know Father Dan Leary. He does a lot of retreats at the Malvern Center.
Mm-hmm.
He's in D.C., but he's a Villanova guy. He does that retreat every year in Malvern. But Father Dan walked him around the parking lot 3 times, then the wife, fiance 3 times. They had their confessions. And then the next thing he came to me and said, okay, we're going to get married. And then 2 weeks later, they got married in the church, which was beautiful.
Awesome. Awesome. You never know how God is going to touch Amen. Hearts and who it's going to happen through. Sometimes, like you said, somebody you just met 5 minutes ago. So God is great, and he's great all the time. And I loved your witness and the time we were able to spend together. And we'll have to do it again sometime.
God bless you, Ken, and your listeners. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thanks for being here. Just, again, that book is Faithful Finances, 6 Steps to Establishing a Catholic Financial Life, available at sophiainstitute.com. Thanks, Chris. Again soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And I think that may be the first time I was able to have a TV personality on. I'd seen some clips of him on Fox Business, but not something I watch on a regular basis. And just a great guy and the work that he's doing. I'm going to do a little bit more checking up on his organization. I'll put a link in that Substack article tomorrow. Again, it's not saintsyet.substack.com. Not saintsyet.substack.com. If you subscribe, it's free. And then I'll include links to get the book. And I do this every week, of links of where you can get books or whatever it is that we talk about in the hour, and other relevant information. So I'll have that for you if you take a look at it. We've got about 20 minutes here, and I'm going to go ahead and read the gospel from today's Mass. And may provide a little insight. The gospel today is taken from the first chapter of Mark. Again, I mentioned in the 4 o'clock hour that we've gone back into ordinary time, and when we do that each year, we go back to the first chapter of Mark, the shortest gospel, the one Father McKay recommends. If you're going to pick up a Bible and start somewhere, start with the Gospel of Mark. I think you can probably read it beginning to end in less than a couple hours, and maybe go back again and read it again much more slowly and prayerfully later. But anyway, the shortest of the four, and I guess trivia information. Our liturgical cycle, in addition to the times of the year, and on the Sundays, we have a three-year rotation of the Gospels that we hear, and there'll be years A, B, and C, and this year, 2025, we're in year C. And then in the at daily Mass, it's a two-year cycle, year one and year two, and we do the odd years as year one, the even years as year two, so we're back in year one. And what's interesting is that the reading at daily Mass for year one is different from year two, but it's the same gospel each year. So, and that gospel, of course, is based on the day and the week of the year in the liturgical calendar. So today we're in Wednesday, the first week in ordinary time. And that gospel today was taken from the first chapter of Mark, verses 29 to 39. On leaving the synagogue, Jesus entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Simon's mother-in-law lay sick with a fever. They immediately told him about her. He approached, grasped her hand, and helped her up. Then the fever left her, and she waited on them. When it was evening after sunset, they brought it to him. They brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. The whole town was gathered at the door. He cured many who were sick with various diseases, and he drove out many demons, not permitting them to speak because they knew him. Rising very early before dawn, he left and went off to a deserted place where he prayed. Simon and those who were with him pursued him, and on finding him said, "Everyone is looking for you." He told them, "Let us go on to the nearby villages, that I may preach there also. For this purpose have I come." So he went into their synagogues, preaching and driving out demons throughout the whole of Galilee. The Gospel of the Lord. And praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. And this comes, this gospel follows up from yesterday, where in Mark 21 to 28, that Jesus was actually in the synagogue, and had one of my favorite lines in all the gospels, and where a person possessed by an unclean spirit cries out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us?" And it's one of my favorite lines, because my favorite movies of all times, it's the trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. And that line is actually right in Lord of the Rings, except instead of Jesus and the man possessed by the demon, it's King Theoden who's possessed, and Gandalf the Grey, who goes through his transition to Gandalf the, I don't know if they call it Gandalf the White, but all of a sudden he has a radiant appearance. In any event, and then in today's gospel, so I that's probably the one of the first public miracles, especially that Jesus performs in the synagogue, where he drives out a demon, and then that gets followed up right away in today's gospel, where he leaves the synagogue where he's done that, and goes to the house of Peter, where he finds his mother to be sick and cures her of her illness. So very early on in Mark's gospel, chapter 1 to be exact, we already have Jesus driving out demons and healing the sick. And in very short order, word travels quickly, especially when good things are happening. Word spreads throughout the neighborhood. Next thing you know, everybody who's possessed and ill are brought to Jesus to be cured. And, you know, what happened 2,025 years ago, or if you subtract the 33, a little less than 2,000 years ago, in Jesus' public ministry, He was driving out demons and curing the sick, and he still wants to drive out demons and cure the sick. And it may not be in the ways that that we hope for, in the ways that we expect. Many times we ask for healing for people, and not only are they not healed, but they actually pass away. Or, you know, other similar situations. And God, you know, does what's best for the individual. I have to believe that, you know, in those cases, especially a serious illness, that you know, a healing is not what God needs or wants. That He wants that person with Him in the kingdom, and the only way that He can make that happen is through a human death. And so, you know, the other thing that strikes me here is all those that were possessed by demons. And so many people today, they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to mention demons. My wife comes from a family where you never mentioned Satan or the evil one, because just by mentioning him, that it was like an invitation to bring him into the house. And that's definitely not the case. In many of our churches today, we've gone back to saying the St. Michael prayer. And, you know, the one of the main thrusts of that is the request that, you know, St. Michael, through God's permission and God's help, is going to drive all those demons back to hell. And unfortunately, it's pretty obvious that that hasn't happened yet. And that all those demons that we read about in the Gospels that were prowling about the world seeking to ruin his souls in Jesus' time, that, you know, I often wonder when you read these stories, he drives them out, but they had to go somewhere. And so do they go from one person to the next? I think in only one case, you know, they left the humans and went into the pigs and drowned themselves in the river. But you know, for the most part, the demons may be driven from one person and then they need to take up residence somewhere else. They don't give up easily, that's for certain. I've been able to talk to some priests that are in that ministry, whether it's as an exorcist or just people that try to help those that may not be fully possessed, but you know, suffer with oppression or obsession. And those demons need to be driven out as well. In our 12-step program, we don't talk a whole lot. We'll talk about the demon that might be alcohol or drugs or whatever your particular addiction is, but we don't talk a whole lot about, you know, the physical demons and how we enter into spiritual warfare. We're in a spiritual battle, sometimes a battle for our lives when it comes to, you know, things like addiction. And so we don't often talk about how to fight those battles. One of the beautiful things that we have today, and again through technology, Chris McMahon mentioned it in our conversation about the positives of technology in the financial world and the help that his firm can provide. But you know, the various podcasts and videos that are out there, where we can really learn about what's going on in the world through the exorcists. Probably the most well-known today would include Father Ripperger and Father Martins. And, you know, when I listen to their podcast, it's not so much to learn about a particular occurrence that happened with, you know, demons in a particular person's life, but it's more about how do we fight that battle. And and the primary way we do it is through the sacraments, especially through confession and receiving Holy Communion as frequently as we can. And obviously, in the first chapter of Mark, that's not available yet. It's not until the end of Mark's Gospel where the Last Supper occurs and Jesus institutes the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist. But he had to do it himself before that. Directly, and I guess he continues to do that directly because he is in those sacraments. When we go to the sacrament of confession, the priest is in persona Christi. We're confessing our sins to Jesus Christ himself, and the priest happens to be his representative. And obviously in the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist, we receive Jesus Christ, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the form of the communion wafer, the consecrated host, if you will. And it's a great aid in that spiritual battle. But I've talked more recently, especially the last retreat that I gave the beginning of December. Part of that spiritual battle involves soul ties and the number of people that we are bound to. And probably won't be able to completely cover it here in the last 8 or 9 minutes, but I've had conversations with my friend Father Wackerman over the past couple of months, and he was really the one that introduced me to this concept of the soul ties. Another friend, Bill Wynn, we've had a similar conversation, but it was more about godly and ungodly relationships that we have. But in a lot of ways, they're the same, and the basis for this is that when God conceived the creation of man, he created us to be tied together, to be bound together. It's in Scripture that when we get married, that we are that we're bound to our spouses, that the two become one. And that's not just, you know, bound like we're scotch taped, we're tied together. This is a binding where the souls become one, or should become one. And God created us that way, with the idea that that we would, in that sacrament of marriage, that the souls will become bound. But what I've learned and really looked into recently is the idea that how we're bound to anyone and everyone that we have relationships with, especially sexual relationships. And when I introduced this as part of a talk on retreat, I mentioned, and it was all men on the retreat, and I asked them how many of them remember the first girl that they ever kissed. And you know, you see a smile or a smirk on just about everybody. And I followed that up with, you know, most people will remember the first person that they kissed, and not only will they remember it, they'll remember their name and they'll remember where it happened. They may not remember the exact date, much like we don't remember our baptismal date. Go get your baptismal certificate and find out when you were baptized. But we'll know the person and where it happened. And even more so with sexual relationships in those intimate moments. And what we may not realize is that it in those relationships that we have formed a soul tie, that we've become bound to those individuals in some ways. And in some of the writings that I've come across, there's those that believe that not only are we bound to that individual, but we're also bound to every individual that that person was bound with. And especially in 12-step circles, you know, people that struggle with addiction a lot of times end up in just bad relationships. And they may not even have been relationships, you know, one-night stands, and folks that, you know, we'll never know the names of, or we didn't care what the name was then, and certainly don't remember it now. And, it, you know, there's a couple things to think about, I think, in regards to this. One is, the devil will continue to bring up those relationships to us. You know, folks that are in recovery, will talk about it. Catholics will talk about it. We hear this idea of, we go to confession, we confess the sin, and God forgets about it. Well, he may forget about it, but the devil doesn't, and he'll bring that up constantly. Images that we may have had as youngsters or teenagers. And out of nowhere, we'll be sitting there doing a good thing, reading a book. We could be at Mass. We could be anywhere doing anything, and all of a sudden that image comes back. Where does that come from? You know, I guess psychiatrists will say, well, that image is buried deep in your brain somewhere, and it's just trying to get out. I have to believe that it's, you know, Satan trying to remind us of who we are and where we came from and the things that we did in order to drag us back down again. But those ties are there, and there's a prayer card that came out, fullofgrace.com. They put out a lot of old fashions, not the right word, but some pretty beautiful prayer cards that I've picked up over the years. They have one for the Litany of Humility. A lot of the litanies they'll have on those cards, and they actually came out recently with one on soul ties. Unfortunately, it needs some work. I ordered a whole bunch of them, and I ended up typing them up myself because of misspellings and what have you. I'm not sure if they've been straightened out yet. But on those cards are prayers that we can use, prayers that we can invoke to try and break those ties. And so if you're somebody who struggles with things that have happened in the past and looking for a way to do that, I highly recommend it. I think if you do a search on the web for soul ties, if you go to fullofgrace.com and get that prayer card, I have a bunch of them. If you'd like one, shoot me an email or reach out. Again, that email address is ken@inhissign.com. I've got a whole bunch of those prayer cards, and they've got typos. It's pretty obvious what the mistakes were, but I'd be happy to send you one if it's something that you're interested in. And again, it, you know, coming from today's gospel, we all, for the most part, I haven't met too many people that don't have demons that, you know, haunt them from time to time. And regardless of whether you're in recovery from addiction for 24 hours, 24 days, or 24 years, those things can still come back. And this is just another tool that can help you. And first of all, we need to recognize it for what it is, and that even though we've done some horrific things in our past, that we are still children of God, that we are blessed by God, we are loved by God, and we can experience His mercy in the sacrament of confession, as long as we fess up to whatever it is that we've done in the past, and that there are ways to battle these things. You know, our priests are great sources for information and help in that regard, especially through sacramental confession. And if you think that you've got something a little bit deeper than that and may require some more time, I encourage you to reach out, talk to a priest after Mass if you can, and see if you can get some of his time. And just on that note, just a reminder to pray for all of our priests. Father McKay, who's still sick, but you know, we're in an uphill battle here when it comes to vocations here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We certainly have more priests, unfortunately, that are passing away than we are ordaining. And the Archbishop's come up with a plan. Hopefully, you've heard about it at Mass last weekend. But come up with a plan on what he would like to see the Archdiocese do in order to help our brother priests and keep our parishes open. But we need to pray for our priests that are still active in ministry, and pray for vocations so that we have access to the Holy Eucharist and confession every day for as long as we need it. And we're going to need it until He comes again. Could be next week, next month, next year. But until then, we need holy priests in order to experience those sacraments. So once again, on this Wednesday afternoon, I thank you for being with us for whatever part of the 2 hours. You can always, for those shows that you've missed, you can always catch them on inhissign.com. Click on content and then podcasts and give a listen. So thank you again for all the support that you give us here. And I enjoy being here each and every Wednesday, and I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. Until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of His hand. Take care, and God bless.